everybody. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Tonight we begin 7 years of the war against Iraq, which has turned into an occupation. A war that, of course, never should have been waged to begin with, one that will be one further horrendous mark against this country when the history of this is finally written. As we have done, as we have done in previous years, in about 30 minutes, when we come back from the break at the bottom of the hour, we are going to let you listen to several minutes of shock and awe. Actually, how many minutes is it, Kathy? Seven minutes of what it sounded like that night 6 years ago. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you are familiar with this this sound that we're going to play for you. But that will be at the bottom of the hour. So hardly seems possible that 6 years ago, this sorry bastard stood in front of us, George W. Bush, and looked right into the camera and lied his ass off. As of Wednesday, I believe it's as of Wednesday, 4,261 Americans are dead, a direct result of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney's murder rampage. That's according to CNN's tally. The Iraq casualty count, the number of Iraqis that have died in George Bush and Dick Cheney's murder spree, ranges anywhere from 300,000 or 400,000 to 1.5 million. Nobody really knows because as the first commander and the first occupation overlord in Iraq said, we don't do Iraqi body counts. The subtext of that being, we really don't care. They're not really people anyway. The rate of U.S. troop deaths has slowed. We are not losing as many Americans as we were. It's hard for me to talk about the Iraq War because even the first Iraq War was a setup by Pappy Bush, the first one. Because of misunderstanding, which is in so many instances the way wars used to be caused, right? Misunderstanding. Well, I didn't know you wanted to keep your own banana plantations. I thought we could just come and take them. Oh, we can't? Oh, damn. I'm sorry. Misunderstanding. But if you remember that fiasco all the way back, it's too far back. We Americans don't think back. Almost 20 years, we can't. It's impossible. We are not capable of going back to 1990, 1991, 1992. We simply can't do it. And one of the reasons we can't, and I include myself in that. Don't think I'm saying. The reason we can't is because we have television, and television is a lethal weapon designed to make us forget. That is the sole function of television, as we've said before in this program, to enable and insist that Americans forget. That's what our society has been about for the longest period of time. It's a forgetful forgetful society. Come on, I get it right. We have to be forgetful because if we were not, we would not have spent the last 20 years, 30 years buying all the junk that we've bought and putting ourselves in debt up to our eyeballs, but we forget. We forget very quickly. I remember actually 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I bought a Ford Ranger pickup truck. And I bought the one with the extended cab, not the seats, just the little extra room in the back. And when we went to the Ford dealer in suburban Atlanta to buy it, I remember sitting in the cab of that thing. And before that, I'd had a small Ranger. This was a big Ranger. And I sat in the cab of that, and I thought, Jesus, God, look at that. Oh, my. Whoa. I couldn't believe it. It looked like the cab of an SUV, frankly. So I bought it. here we are 5 years later, and it only had, what does it have? 38,000 miles on it. That's all it's got is 38,000 miles on it. And I look at it now, and it's just this old truck. It's just a truck. It's just a pickup truck. You know, I get in it some mornings to take Molly to school, and starts fine. Radio still works. The sixth CD player works like a charm, but it's just an old truck. I mean, and I, you know, sometimes I look at it and think, Jesus, God, what was it that really turned me on about this thing? We are programmed in this society to forget. Otherwise, we would not have become the insane spending consumer society, as Bush used to call us. We're not people. We're not citizens. We are consumers. So it affects all of us. That's what this country is about. It's about forgetfulness. You know, ask an Armenian about what happened 85 or 90 years ago and see what kind of an answer you get. You know, about the Turks. Ask the Palestinians about what happened 60 years ago, 61 years ago. Ask the Jews about what happened 80, 75 years ago. The historical, and that's not even very much memory, but all these different groups can tell you exactly what happened, because in each instance, these groups were being slaughtered, were being murdered collectively and with much dispatch in order to fulfill somebody's weird idea of how things should be. But ask an American about, well, do you remember George Herbert Walker Bush's war? And you get a blank look. Ask someone to tell you the name of the federal building that was blown up and how many people died and the name of the guy who did it. Ask people. Without putting that part of it together, just stop somebody in the street and say, hey, you remember Timothy McVeigh? Better yet, here's a better one. Ask somebody if they know the name David Koresh. And you know what kind of response you're going to get. You're going to get blank stares and, well, is this a trick? What are you with, TV? So we simply don't remember, and that's part of... Part of our raison d'etre, as the French would say. That's why we're here. That's why we exist, so that we don't remember. If we did remember, I think we probably would remember the idiocy of that $400 coffee maker we bought, 3 or 4 years ago, right? But now it's just an old pickup truck. The Iraq War, the first one, was horrifying. During the first Iraq War, my youngest brother was dying of metastatic colon cancer that had eaten up his entire body. And the combination and juxtaposition of having a close family member dying a slow, agonizing death, because Danny was a freelance artist and therefore his medical situation was Medicaid. And while that's going on, a personal tragedy in our family, and then this overarching tragedy of invading another country. The part that I remember from the first war was all the yellow ribbons that were everywhere, and the playing of that song by Dawn. What was the name of that group? Tie a yellow ribbon round the, you know. Well, the second one, Tony Orlando and Dawn. The second Iraq War is still close enough that a lot of Americans remember it. That a few Americans remember it. Stick around. We have miles to go tonight. America.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Well, the sideshow continued today, didn't it? About the AIG bonuses. What was interesting, for the second time in the past several days that Barack Obama, or has it been a couple of weeks, has had these town hall meetings, not a single question from the audience has had anything to do with AIG bonuses or anybody's bonuses. And I don't know why the politicians in Washington, who really are so out of touch, aren't they? The Republicans are just slimy, lying, cheating sneaks. The Democrats are cowardly, stick their head up their asses, kind of non-politicians. Neither party at this point is doing anything. I'm astonished. Which is not to say that I hate Democrats as much as I hate Republicans. No, 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 no. That will never happen. It's just that I'm so tired of the Democrats. I could vote for a third party candidate.
Well, why didn't you do that last time?
Well, for the obvious reason, I once again, like a lot of people, had to use my vote to stop a McCain-Palin ticket. But anyway, I digress. It seems that the only people who care about these bonuses and the big AIG scandal, and what's the new one now? This Indian man, Pandit Mahatma, or whatever the hell his name is, who heads, is it Citigroup, Kathy? $10 million to refurbish his office? Son of a bitch. You know these buildings ought to, I don't know. I almost said these buildings ought to be burned down, and I guess I can't say that, because that would be inciting riots or something. But the audacity of these people, I mean, it's astonishing the disconnect between these corporate leaders who, you know, if you took any one of these guys, any one of them, and they're mostly guys, there might be a few women, but not that many, take one of these corporate leaders, give him a box of nails and a hammer and a saw and put him out in the yard somewhere and give him a stack of lumber and say, okay, you've got about 48 hours to build a just a basic elemental shelter. There's your nails, there's your hammer, there's your lumber. How far do you think these pigs would get? In the first place, they would look at the hammer and wonder where you plugged it in. I mean, it's incredible how useless. What do they do? What do they do? They do nothing. They pillage, they loot, they steal, they take, they end jobs, they transfer jobs out of the country, they avoid taxes. All of them, all of them. I don't care what the company is, General Electric, all the way, all of them, all of these corporate monsters. This is all they do. And what do? I noticed in a report from France that the French workers are going on another, 24-hour strike in protest of the Sarkozy government, because of what now? What is something to do with, Social Security payments or the equivalent thereof, or is it labor costs, or I don't know, fuel again? I think it was last week, and they had 1.5 million people in the streets. And what's the population of France? 40 million? 80 million? I honestly don't know. But in some of these European countries, this happens with alarming regularity. The people say, wait a minute. What is this? And if the government doesn't have a good, clear, concise, short answer, the people say, well, screw you then. Until you come up with a good answer, we're walking out. And they walk out. We can't even get people to stop buying on one day in this country. Oh, it's stopping now, though, isn't it, huh? But what did I read in the business section of New York Times today? Prices are creeping back up a little bit, so nobody has to worry about deflation. Ooh, that's wonderful. Prices are going back up. You got to wonder who in the hell is buying stuff. But I guess people are. What a sideshow. What a distraction. And to watch these scurvy Republicans, especially Boehner, John Boehner, who is this guy? Where did, you know, go back to your tanning booth, Boehner. Shut up. Sit down. Is there anything this guy says that ever registers on a scale of logic or common sense or interest in his country? What a piglet. And this prune looking, Mitch McConnell on the Senate side. Where do these people come from? How do they get elected and reelected and oh, never mind. We've gone through this so many times. It's pointless. It's pointless. About the people that are selected by the voters to go to Washington. The assault on Barack Obama, though, is just fun to watch. Washington Post is, when I say fun, again, in a macabre sort of way, Washington Post is in on it now, going after Barack Obama. I might give you a little bit of that, too. Framing Obama by the Washington Post, one of Robert Perry's reports at consortiumnews.com. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Uh-oh, he's just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 or thereabouts before the hour. Got an email from Bob this evening. Hey, Mike, the Iraq War began 6 years ago today. I thought you'd never know it by looking at our nation's newspapers' websites. This afternoon, while waiting for school to get out, I met another man waiting for his son. 6 months ago, he came here with his family from Iraq. Two of his children had been killed. He talked about 7,000 years of his country's history. And he said Baghdad would rise from the ashes, as it has done so many times in the past. He said he was surprised when he first arrived because he thought that Americans would be a warlike people. He smiled when he told me he realized that we were human, just like him. And then his little boy came out of the school, and my little boy came out. He said it was good to meet us, and they walked away to their car. I had just been listening to him all the while. I smiled when he smiled. I agreed with him when he talked about Seattle's rain, but I mostly listened to him. I had nothing to say, or rather, I couldn't think of anything to say. Here was a man who came from Iraq with the surviving members of his family to Seattle as refugees because my country invaded his country 6 years ago and blew it all to hell. So, quick question. How are you feeling right now? Huh? That was only 7 minutes. And I think the bombardment went on for over an hour. How are you feeling right now? It freaks me out to know that I lived under a leadership that could do that to an 8,000-9,000-year-old city, the capital of the country, that had done nothing to us. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. And when I hear that barrage, just those 7 minutes of it, every year when I hear that, and trust me, I do not play it during the year, but I think it's appropriate, isn't it? On the anniversary of the lies, the war crimes, the crimes against humanity that were committed by Cheney and Bush. But when I hear that, when I hear that barrage, it gets a little hard for me to breathe. Now, that may be a function of my age and have nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that I'm listening to absolute terror being rained down on a country that did nothing to us. And to think that I live in a society that produced leadership that could do that. We'll be back after the break.
Won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got a lot of time.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
It is 9:30 before the hour. Last night we read a lengthy essay by Robert Freeman? And it evoked an awful lot of interest. We even got an email from the author today who wants an audio of my reading of that he can share with his classmates, which I think our audio person, Ben Birch, will take care of. And I got several dozen responses, and I want to share one with you here. This is written by Paul Karsh. I guess I can give his last name. Hi, Mike. I have a couple of comments on the Freeman essay that you read last night. There are important qualitative differences in the political situation that existed in post-World War I Germany and our own. The German people went through a war that, because of a British blockade, left the people with serious shortages of food and other resources. At the end of the war, the Kaiser abdicated and basically flew the coup, leaving the Social Democrats holding the bag. The Weimar government that was formed basically had no political history and thus little legitimacy. The government was forced to sign the Treaty of Versailles, which was deliberately written to be humiliating to the defeated German nation. The leaders of this government were basically academic intellectuals. They were constantly having to deal with economic catastrophe, brought on in part by the reparations payments imposed by the Versailles Treaty and with violent social unrest. While we are having to struggle with the distinct possibility of economic collapse, in other respects, our political situation is different. We are not, quote, utterly devastated, end quote. We have had an orderly transfer of power to an individual who, whether you agree with him or not, should be recognized as being an astute and talented politician. While we hear about discomfort or discontent, I personally do not think it is anywhere near the level that existed in post-World War Germany. Of course, I really don't know, as I didn't actually live in post-World War I Germany. While this important qualitative difference exists, I think that Freeman's fundamental warning is valid. The Republican opposition is acting in a way that supports his thesis that they will try to destroy our country for their own purposes. While at the moment their message does not appear to be resonating with the majority, we must be aggressive and show them up for the lying traitors that they are. Paul Karsh. Thanks, Paul. And yes, I appreciate the fact that as Paul puts it, the qualitative differences between the United States 2009 and Germany 1919. And I think that Freeman's main point was the mindset and how of the German people, and how easy it was for a group considered to be on the fringe, kook fringe people like the Limbaughs the usual gang, completely out on the fringe with an hysterical message that makes no sense at all, but has a potential to cause a lot of damage. And then all of a sudden, that kook fringe in Germany was in power. And we know what happened next. So thanks both to Robert Freeman for an incredible essay. And to all of you who wrote in response. From Prairie 2. The subject tonight, Prairie 2 writes, it's only inflation if the little guy gets the money. Prairie 2 writes, he is, if you're just tuning in, our economics correspondent. Prairie 2 writes, Republicans are in a tizzy because the Fed is creating $1 trillion out of thin air to jumpstart the economy. Republicans didn't mind that the Fed was creating trillions out of thin air for the last 8 years so that Wall Street banks could create a huge house of cards. Notice what the price of oil did when the banks could no longer afford to buy oil futures. Thud. Republicans didn't question why the Saudis and the Chinese had surplus dollars to lend Bush so that he could run a $1 trillion a year deficit. This was only possible because the Fed was creating money out of thin air to hide the trade deficit. The insane trade policies of the Republicans wouldn't have lasted 2 years without Alan Greenspan creating money out of thin air. But even with the Bush spending money borrowed from China, spending it like water, the money was piling up in foreign accounts. The solution was to create bigger and bigger bubbles. Wild speculation in the commodities markets, securitized debt, complex credit default swaps, derivatives based on debt, derivatives based on derivatives, and repeat that 10 times. They were heating up the economy faster than ExxonMobil is heating up the planet, but not the real economy, just the paper economy. A year ago, China pulled the plug and laid off 20 million workers. Then the bubbles started to pop. Deflation set in and sucked $45 trillion out of the global economy. Now Republicans are sure that a new trillion aimed at homeowners instead of Wall Street banks will cause inflation. Republicans are jumping up and down with fake populist outrage about who knew what about bonuses. Even liberals are letting the right define their outrage. Haven't we learned anything? Republicans won't ever admit the truth. Anything Republicans are outraged about is just a lie to hide their own responsibility. Prairie 2. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back. Oh, and bottom of the next hour coming up, we have an Uncle Mike Story Corner, which we haven't done for a while. So Stick around. We're also going to open up the telephones over the top of the break here. So if you would like to get online and chat, the number is 877-99-MALLOY. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour, as it always is when we come back from the news. Welcome back. The Malloy program here. The number again is 877-99-MALLOY. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening via the Internet. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Oh, yeah. I was going to talk about the AIG thing, but I was distracted by the shock and awe business, so I thought I'd start by saying how I felt.
Okay.
The same way I did at the time, I knew we were being lied to. The whole business about the inspectors, it just got to me. I knew we were being lied to.
Right.
So I felt aggrieved and raged and just overlaid with a sickly helplessness that I can still feel. But, so I don't want to forget that, so I kind of appreciate you bringing that up on the anniversary every time.
Well, like I said, you know, we in this country are programmed deliberately to forget things as quickly as possible, because to remember things would be to put at risk the whole phony ass structure that we have in this country, whether it's the economic structure, which we now see how phony that was, the political structure, which is an absolute joke, giving these voting machines. The social structure, which is pretty much non-existent, if you're not some sort of a media star, you really don't exist. I just go on and on. All the structures are Alice in Wonderland type things. So we have to forget very quickly. As soon as we are exposed to these structures, we got to forget what they really do and focus on, I don't know, keeping our nose to the grind until they take the grind out of the country. Then we're kind of screwed, right? But you really called about the AIG madness, huh?
Yeah. I'm one of those people, I have trouble forgetting things.
Ah.
So that's probably one of the reasons why I had to take it upon myself to take responsibility for my own sanity.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, when I heard about the AIG thing, and the more I heard about it, the more it reminded me of how a bookie stays in business.
Uh-huh.
Because that's basically what these credit default things are, is bets.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's not money to produce anything or make anything or build bridges or dig mines or start farms or small business. No, hell no. It's a gambling casino.
And a bookie stays in business by taking bets on one side and then laying off a sufficient number of bets,
right,
on the other side, so that whichever way it goes, he's not going to go broke.
That's right.
So the first thing I thought of was, why didn't these AIG and the other people do that?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the next question I had for myself was, how do I know they didn't?
Right.
How do I know they don't have compensating IOUs in their back pockets.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, Doug, no matter how this is played, it is now necessary to recognize, I think, a couple of facts. And that is the banking system in this country, as we've known it all these years, is obviously upended and corrupted to the point where, you know, you can make a good argument that it's never going to come back, because there's not enough money to bring it back. And who wants to pay it anyway? I mean, Jesus Christ, who wants to continue to do this? This is insanity. So,
that's literally the word, Mike. I mean, the latest word I heard on this is that there are something like $1 quadrillion worth of these bets floating around, which
right.
is something like 18 times the net worth of the earth.
right, if you could find someone to buy it. Yeah.
So, unless they cancel out somehow, no one, nowhere is going to pay anything off.
Well, that's the thing, and I'm starting more and more to thank Douglas. And listen, thanks. Let me move on. I appreciate you checking in. I'm starting to think more and more about the only way out of this is to just cancel everything. I mean, cancel all debt everywhere. Well, what else are you going to do? I realize that's not, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, if any sense. It probably makes zero sense. It's probably on the sense meter. That idea probably comes up on the negative side. But what else are you going to do? Who's going to pay for this? This quadrillion figure that's being batted around, what is it, $1 billion? And I'm not sure if it's a single quadrillion or six quadrillion. It matters not. It's asinine for people to think in those terms, because it doesn't exist. None of that exists. These are zeros on a phony cyber balance sheet someplace that makes absolutely no sense. None whatsoever. With all the talk about all the debt that we're loading onto our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, why not just cancel it all? I mean, maybe Prairie 2 can explain that to me. But why not just say, okay, listen, everything is now canceled. I don't care if you owe your neighborhood bookie. Well, you can't do that. The bookies have to be paid. But your mortgage debt, your credit card debt, the debt that these companies have, we cancel it all. Everything is canceled. Everything goes back to square one. Because at some point there had to have been a square one, wasn't there? Wasn't there a square one sometime somewhere? Was it all the way back to what? When we stopped being hunter-gatherers and started settling down and farming? I mean, is that where it began? Or did it begin with the Industrial Revolution? Did it begin in London somewhere around the time of Charles Dickens? You know, I don't know, but it had to have a beginning point, didn't it? And what existed before that beginning point? Probably short, nasty, brutish lives, but what are we having now? We're having long, nasty, brutish lives, comparatively speaking. And I realize we're in the United States. We're not in Darfur. I understand. I really do. I really, honestly understand that. Which kind of makes the point. Why don't we just cancel everything and start all over again? Only this time. Really, if we're going to stick with this insane, bloody capitalist model, which I don't think we will. I think people have had enough. I think they really have had enough. They're not willing to admit that yet. I don't think you know the people that live in Frank's book, What's the Matter with Kansas? I don't think they're ready to admit it. The Republicans can't admit anything. They just immediately turn to the South and see what Rush Limbaugh is saying down from Palm Beach, and then they bobblehead him. But, you know, for normal people, haven't we had enough? I think we have. I think we've really had enough. So cancel all debt, and we start over again. Without the capitalist model, let's go for the democratic socialism. Let us put together a board of people to run the five or six key industries in this country, those industries that everybody from which everybody has to partake, whether it's transportation or healthcare or banking, whatever it is. Only wouldn't call it banking anymore because that word now has a connotation to it like mass killer. has a connotation, or Bush Cheney has a connotation. Well, banker, banking now has that same bloody, destructive connotation. So we have to come up with a different word. Maybe we can call it money exchange or here's mine, where's yours kind of thing. We could trademark that. I don't know. But why not do that? Maybe somebody has a good idea. I'm too dense, and I'm not educated enough to understand why we couldn't do that. It would be shock. Oh, don't go back to that. It would be kind of a shock. But isn't that what we did to the what our experts, our economic experts, did to the Soviet Union when it folded? Said, okay, here we go, shock and awe. Everything starts back at square one. I don't know. Maybe that's a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. Stay with us. I'm Mike Maloney.
It is the best thing to keep the money in your mason jar. Is okay too if you see a bank. Well, you know what to do. Now let me tell you people something. Only banks I like Ernie Banks, all right. And I like the banks of the Mississippi River. Yeah, and I like banks of Fender Twin Reverb. Well, when I walk in there, treat me like a dog, gonna hit him in the head with the voodoo law. Republicans, one and all, their tallywhackers are mighty small. Steal from the poor and the give to the rich, gonna make the bank president twitch in a ditch. Oh. I hate banks. Yeah.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Maloney.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks are free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Let me tell you. Damn guys ain't dumb. Maybe get up.
It's about 22 past the hour. All right, back to your phone calls. Nick is calling from Lawrenceville, New Jersey, listening on Sirius. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? Great show. Really appreciate what you do.
Well, thanks, Nick. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I'm a proud member of the Green Party, but this is certainly something that crosses party lines. I'm wondering, maybe we might just need a national corporate personhood, a revamping of the laws so that corporations are no longer the masters and human beings reassert their control over corporations again.
Yeah, wouldn't that be, or isn't that a novel idea? You know, didn't it take a ruling by the Supreme Court to declare that corporations had as much of a right to exist and have the same constitutional rights as a human being?
That's right.
Yeah. Is that a good working definition of nuttiness or what?
I mean, that was just crazy. And from what I heard about that, I'm not a lawyer, but I heard that the clerk inserted that. Not even the judge wrote it in. But the bottom line is, here's a chance for the Democrats to prove that they're for the working guy out there.
I'm sorry, excuse me.
Right, but you know what I mean.
I do.
It's like, so you know, challenge them to challenge the corporations by deciding that, you know, as human beings, we're going to pass a federal amendment to the Constitution reasserting people's rights over corporations. And, you know, if they're friends of the people like they claim to be, they'll, you know, they'll do it. Otherwise, they'll hem and haw as usual.
Right.
And we'll be stuck fighting Walmarts and incinerators and nuclear power plants for the next 1,000 years.
Well, that's probably what would happen, the latter there, because as much as I hold Republican office holders in utter contempt because of their actions. I also hold Democratic office holders in contempt because of their inactions.
Right.
I've never seen such a pack of cowards as the leadership of the Democratic Party. I'm not saying that all elected Democrats are cowards at all. Matter of fact, there's some awfully courageous people in that party. But the leadership, I don't quite get that. I've stopped trying to understand it. So,
they ought to change their symbol from the donkey to the jellyfish.
A rabbit would work.
rabbit too.
That would work. All right, good idea. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate you checking in. Okay.
Thank you for kicking butt.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care. Dennis is calling from, he's driving in Montana, listening on Sirius. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, I too appreciate, what you do on the radio and your opinion and the fact that you and others like Tom Hartman, you guys are a counterbalance to the, far right wackos.
Well,
and
we're kind of outnumbered.
Appreciate your opinion.
Well, thanks. We're kind of outnumbered and outgunned, but I guess that's, you know, that's kind of the idea. But yeah.
Well, keep up the good work. Anyway, I called because I did want to comment on the audio of the shock and awe that you played earlier this evening, and what that does for me, it brings back, you know, horrific memories of my time in Vietnam and my remembrances of the B-52
right.
saturation bombings that we had going on, the napalm strafing of villages, and all the horror of war.
Mm-hmm.
And as a 19-year-old, when I returned home in January of 1970, it changed my life dramatically, and I was disillusioned with my country. And one of my thoughts was that, and one of my prayers and hopes was that this would never happen again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But 15 years later, we, you know, felt the need to do the same thing in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I never was for that war or the recent one 7 years ago. But I truly support our troops. I'm behind those guys. And I remember the night that we made the incursion after all the bombing in 90.
Mm-hmm.
I was nervous, but I was up all night thinking about the guys going in.
Hey, Dennis, I got a break, but I want to hear some more of what you got to say. Can you hold on? Right? All right, Dennis, let me put you on hold. We'll come back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Well, we lost Dennis. Dennis, if you're listening, I wanted to put you on hold because I wanted to hear some more of what you had to say. I might have given you the impression we were, you know, just going to take a break and disconnect from you. But if you're out there still, Call back in, okay? Oh, and by the way, Dennis, Dinky Dow in Detroit says hello and hang in there. okay. Larry is calling from Clover, South Carolina, listening on XM. Hey, Larry.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. You driving through Clover?
No, sir. I live in Clover.
Oh, you live there. Okay.
It's Thursday night. My mom has been cut in half. Thank you, George W. Bush, for messing my job up. And then we have people back in. Then we have Brock Lee trying to get us to work.
Uh-huh.
And these guys are sitting out there hollering. I was sitting at the terminal 2 days ago. The guy was sitting out there hollering, "Oh, do this, and Brock's going dead, and what's he going to do?" And I'm saying to myself, man, Brock's trying to fix the mess we're in now. Do you not understand? Do you not understand?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a shame. You was comparing to Hitler a while ago, and I back you 100%. America needs you.
What are you doing for work right now, Larry?
I drive an 18-wheeler truck. Yep. I don't know where I should say my company name on the radio or not.
Oh, but yeah, go ahead.
I drive for Heartland Express.
Okay.
Our miles have been cut. I'm averaging like 300 miles a day. Last year, 3 years ago this time, I was averaging almost almost 500 miles a day. George W. Bush has messed America up, work-wise and everything else. And what I don't understand is how people say, well, he wasn't that bad of a president. Man, open your eyes.
Yeah, really.
Look what's going on right now.
Really. All right, so your driving, your miles have been cut by a fourth or a third. So
yes, sir.
How do you make up for that? Are you married?
Yes, sir.
Does your wife work?
Yes, sir. My wife works at a bank in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, the job has been lost around here. You got job lost. People can't work. Our work's cut in half, and people still sitting out there saying, "Well, Brock can't do this, and Brock can't do this. Brock can't do everything."
Right, right.
But at least he's trying.
Yeah, he is trying, and he's getting absolutely no help whatsoever from Republicans, and in some instances he's not getting a whole lot of help from members of his own party, but the Republicans have certainly made it clear that they're going to follow the leader of the Republican Party, Rush Limbaugh, who wants to see Barack Obama fail. And what a damn shame, because if he fails, then people like you and I and most of us who are in the working class, and God knows I'm in the working class, we're going to fail too.
Yes, sir. And it is a shame, and I'm not going to cuss on the radio, and I'm going to show you respect. It is a shame that people can't see what's going on now.
Right.
I mean, it's like people wearing blinders over their eyes, and it's hard to believe. I'm sitting at a terminal yesterday with 25 people. We were watching that AGI thing,
and
they're sitting there talking about, well, when Brock had his speech right before that, oh, he can't do this and he can't do that and he can't do this. I'm saying to myself, give the man a chance. You see what George Bush done in that year? And they said, well, we had a Democratic House or Senate for the last 2 years. I said, look what we had 6 years before that, man. It was 100% Republican. That's what got us in this mess we're in now.
You get real frustrated, doesn't it, when you're sitting there and you're the only one on that side of the argument?
Yes, sir. Sure. And Mike, I back you 100%. When you start selling bumper stickers, or you start selling T-shirts, announce it on air and tell them where to buy them at.
I'll do it. Do you have children, Larry?
No, sir. We sure don't.
All right. Well, listen, I'm glad you called in. Stay in touch. All right.
Yes, sir. I try my best to listen to you every night because, in my opinion, Mike Malloy, and I used to listen to Randy Rose, and Randy Rose, she's not on the same time slot on FM, but we need you out there, and I'm trying to get people to listen to you, because in my opinion, you're like Brock. You're trying to put the truth out there for people to realize.
Well,
instead of listening to a drug addict.
Yeah, really. I hear what you're saying. Larry, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in, and I hope you stay in touch, pal. And I hope you get some work, too. And again, Kathy and I understand this on a gut level, just like a lot of you folks do. We were employed up until about 3 weeks ago. Now, a lot of folks might think, well, you know, so what? You're in radio, you know, you'll get another job. No, we didn't. No, we didn't. So no, I do understand it. There is that, boy, I'll tell you, and I've been unemployed before, but things were different then. You know what I'm saying? And that moment when you, when you realize, hey, the plug's been pulled. It's real scary. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Everybody knows that. Everybody's been through unemployment. Only this time, I don't know. It's just bizarre. a P.S. from Prairie 2 here for tonight. He writes, and the problem with AIG is the counterparty on a lot of their derivatives was Goldman Sachs. I guess by counterparty, he means AIG and Goldman Sachs traded derivatives back and forth. And even if they had spread it around, it would have triggered more defaults. Yes, it all needs to be canceled. Oh, this is a reference to what I said about canceling the debt. It all needs to be canceled. That's what they mean when they talk about unwinding all of this. But the G20, excuse me, the top 20 economic engines on the globe, the G20 has to get a handle on it first. There are players that aren't even in the G20 that hold so much of this crap, this bad debt, that everybody is afraid of a panic. And by the way, between 1930 and 1981, the title investment banker had the same social status as if you called yourself a disbarred lawyer turned used car salesman. And up until a few months ago, they were masters of the universe. Yeah. When I saw this today, I couldn't help but think about some of the things Prairie 2 had been telling us over the past several months. You know, buy canned goods. Tomorrow, the First Lady, Michelle Obama, will begin digging up a patch of White House lawn to plant a vegetable garden. Now, that's no, I'm not laughing because I think it's goofy or silly. I think it's wonderful. This is the first vegetable garden that has been on White House grounds since Eleanor Roosevelt's Victory Garden in World War II. I discovered from the New York Times. It'll be organic. It will provide food for the first family's meals and formal dinners. Mrs. Obama said it will also be to educate children, hers and others, about healthful, locally grown vegetables and fruit at a time when obesity has become a national concern. 23 fifth graders from the Bancroft Elementary School in Washington, D.C. will help her dig up the soil for the 1,100-square-foot plot in a spot visible to passersby on E Street. Students from the school, which has the school's had a garden since 2001, will also help plant, harvest, and cook the vegetables, berries, and herbs. 1,100 square feet, which would be, what, maybe 30 by 40? Would that be about right? That'd be 1,200, wouldn't it? Roughly 30 by 40. That reminds me, that's a fairly good-sized garden. And that reminds me of the garden plot that I spent a lot of time in when I was a kid, my grandmother's garden plot. She grew every damn thing. And on top of everything else, my grandfather, being the crazed Italian immigrant that he was, when he had any kind of distress in the lower tract, he would go out in the yard and cut dandelion greens and bring them in. And wash them off and put vinegar and oil and salt and pepper on them and eat those. I tried those one time. Jesus God. It's like eating sawgrass. It was just awful. But, yeah, a big garden. And I spent so many summer days, as a lot of you people did, too, while watching my grandmother can vegetables and fruits. They had a fruit orchard. They had apples and cherries and plums, you know, the kind of stuff that would grow in northwestern Ohio. But all those vegetables, and then down in that dark, scary basement, just row upon row upon row of canned produce. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malone. You just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. And I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Email from Deborah in Portland, Oregon, who writes, I'm sick of the Congress circus show as well. About this madness about AIG. I have a solution, Deborah writes. Has anyone on Wall Street or Capitol Hill ever heard of forensic accountants? The huge mess created by AIG, Citibank, and all the rest was no oops. They knew exactly what they were doing. It is not terribly complicated. Hire every forensic accountant out of a job right now and have them storm these thieves' kingdoms. Yeah, I certainly could agree with that, Deborah. Eric is calling from Portland, as a matter of fact. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate everything you and Kathy do.
Thank you.
Wow. Listening to those bombs over Baghdad was pretty rough.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, you're just filled with this sadness and rage, and it's hard to find a place to direct it. But
you know, I a couple of years ago, maybe it was the second or third year into that war, I played that a bit of audio. And this is when I was with Air America, and immediately got a phone call when it was over from a visitor from the UK who was in New York and listening. At the time, we had an affiliate in New York City. And when she called in, she said, I'm old enough to remember the Blitz against London in, I guess it was 40, 41. And she said, I was a child at the time, but I remember the sound as we all went down into the tube to get away from the explosions in London. And she said, that sound you just played just sent my skin crawling because it was exactly the sound of the German blitz against London all those years ago.
And, you know, the sounds are bad. And I was calling in part because of the silence.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm hearing as well.
Mm.
It made me think a lot about my sister and my brother-in-law tonight. And he's thankfully not going to be redeployed. Brain damage and PTSD have kind of grounded that idea. But,
oh, my God. He was in Iraq?
He was in Iraq. He was protecting some of the war profiteer convoys.
Yeah.
And an IED kind of just blew up and blasted him full of shrapnel.
Oh my God!
And aside from the fact that they are trying to say that his PTSD is somehow from before going to Iraq.
Right. Yeah, from what? Living in Portland.
Yeah. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I see pictures of him and he used to smile,
mm-hmm.
and now he doesn't know how to react except with anger. I mean, and he and my sister, they have five kids. Aging 9 months to 18 years. And he goes over there and he kills kids. And then he comes back and he has to be the dad for these kids. And he doesn't know how to separate those two worlds. And so there's this blending that just happens. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point where my sister has to be the complete disciplinarian now because even with the 3-year-old, he just doesn't know what he's doing and will just react completely inappropriately, not violently at this point, but
right.
in a scary manner.
Right.
And there are a million Iraqis, and that's at this point, that seems like a conservative estimate. But then you think about the dead soldiers, the wounded soldiers, and then the rest of them, like my brother-in-law, whose physical wounds are the least of his problems.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this silence. And it sounds a lot like those bombs over Baghdad. And it's just atrocious.
I hear you, Eric. Listen, I don't know what to say when I hear something like that from somebody's family. I just don't know what to say, you know. Except I'm glad you called, and I hope you stay in touch. All right.
Well, aside from that, Mike, I wanted to know if there was anything in the near future to where a Founders Club type program might come up to where some of your listeners would be able to. Support you financially a little bit more.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And yes, that's coming. We have a new website that's going to be launched about the 1st of April. That's appropriate, right? Around the first of April, first week in April. And yeah, we will be looking for subscribers to the podcast. And there's all sorts of ways that people will be able to help keep us on the air. We're not going to make a great big blatant plea for charity. We're just going to say, here's the deal. These podcasts are available. This is a price that's going to be a lot cheaper than they were when we were at Nova M. And we'll just do our best to continue to stay on the air. I'm just damn bound and determined to stay on the air, to ride this sucker out and see what happens. I said once before, I'm kind of like the Carlton Heston, who stood before the NRA and held up the flintlock and said, from my cold, dead hands, I feel that way about this microphone.
Right on.
So, all right, Eric, thanks, man.
Thank you, Mike.
All right,
have a good night.
Sir. All right, you too. Take care. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, we will have, we'll have information up the first week in April. And I understand that the website is going to be pretty spectacular. You'll be able to go there and hear 1 and 2 minute chunks, sound bites from the previous night's program. What else is going to be on that, Kathy? Are we going to go back to the Malloy's Uncensored mailbag?
All kinds of surprises. There'll be video and YouTube links and little doohickeys you can order, and ways to blog with your friends. And
oh, that's right.
Touch.
That's right.
It's
all kinds
be
of stuff.
Very
yeah.
interactive.
Yeah, because I understand the server that we're going to be connected to is about the size of the old Yankee Stadium before they. It's a big server. And of course, we will also have the podcast available that'll be put together by Ben Birch, who has been working with this program for what, a decade now, for God's sake. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Malloy program. We have two open lines if you want to jump in and join us. 877-996-1220. 877-99-2556 is the number, or 877-99-Malloy. Either way you want to do it. Email from Will, writing about Eric's call. Mike, I've been through what Eric's family member is going through. After Operation Desert Storm, my PTSD was deliberately misdiagnosed as borderline personality disorder and presumed to be a pre-existing condition prior to my enlistment. As a result, despite over a year of redundant paperwork, red tape, and emotional stress, I am ineligible for VA benefits, so I have to settle for Social Security benefits instead. On Medicare, I have to pay a 50% copay for mental health services, which amounts to around $120 a month. If I were eligible for VA benefits, I would have no copay other than a small copay on prescriptions. Will, you know, thanks, Will. I was thinking about this the other day. I don't know why. Something about these traumatic injuries that people come home from George W. Bush and Dick Cheney's war of opportunity. These sons of bitches are gone now. See, George Bush is writing a book. Dick Cheney is buggering little children somewhere or whatever. No, that's Limbaugh. Dick Cheney is doing something to make money. God only knows what the rat bastard is doing, or to spend the money that he's stolen is more like it. While we still have people who are on the firing line in Iraq, who may be dead by tomorrow morning, we still have thousands, tens of thousands, literally tens of thousands of soldiers and Marines who have been recycled through this meat grinder that these sons of bitches set up so many times. That I like Eric was talking about, I fear for the family members when some of these guys come home, not because they're bad people, but because of what they've been exposed to. So I had an idea the other day. Why not this? If the United States wants to send people into a combat zone under any circumstances, And especially when it's a horrible, filthy, degenerate war of opportunity like these rat bastards sent our troops into. Anytime a soldier or a Marine or any branch of the service, when they go into a combat zone, when they come out, automatically they are given whatever it takes in terms of compensation for post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, who's kidding whom, God damn it? You don't go to a combat zone and do what you are told to do and come out of it with your mind the same as when you went in. Nobody does. So it should be up to the returning soldier or Marine to prove that he does not need compensation for PTSD, not to prove that he does need it. Every person who's ever been in a combat zone suffers from the horror of what that's all about. Even the ones who go in all gung-ho, give me a rifle, I'm ready to go. Well, I can't say that on the air. BS. That's not true. I have never, ever, ever talked to any veteran who's been in combat, whether it was World War II when I was younger and still had family members alive who had served there, or Vietnam, even Korea, or any military operation, who came back and was perfectly okay. Hi, oh good, let's go on a picnic today. Yes, I just got back a couple of months ago from being shot at and having to shoot in return and bombs going off. Yeah, everything's fine. One of the things that was unnerving to me about Timothy McVeigh was how calm he was, how rational he seemed in the letters that he and Gore Vidal wrote back and forth to each other before the United States executed him. And Timothy McVeigh laid out in cold, lucid detail in his letters to Gore Vidal, which eventually were published, as to why he decided to murder 168 people. And if you read that, you would sit there and think, Jesus Christ in heaven, this is a man who is so far gone from what he experienced in Iraq in Gulf War I that he doesn't even understand what he's saying. But he's saying it so so calculatedly, so deliberately, and I hate to use this word, so innocently. Timothy McVeigh committed mass murder because of what happened to him, what he saw as his government. Remember whose government it was at the time, George Herbert Walker Bush. Because his government did A, B, C, and D. That was his rationale. That was the way he struck out. But before we write him off as some militaristic skinhead, let's hold on just a second. Read what Gore Vidal published about those letters going back and forth, and you will might change your mind about the condition of Timothy McVeigh when he decided to murder 168 people in Oklahoma City. Every soldier, every Marine who comes back from combat should be automatically considered, not assumed, considered to be a victim of PTSD. How could he or she not be, for Christ's sake? Come on, get real, people. But this filthy, stinking government that, well, is more than willing to send people to kill and be killed, but when they come back, come on, man. God damn, your borderline personality disorder. That was before you went in. What the hell, blowing up a few people over in Iraq, get shot at night and day, and you know, being ordered to use white phosphorus. Come on, God damn it. Straighten up, soldier. Keep moving. Jesus Christ. Got sidetracked. All right, back to your phone calls. Bob is calling from Brunswick, Georgia, listening on XM. Hey, Bob.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
What you were just talking remind me of the Deer Hunter, the movie with Deer Hunter. Remember that one?
Oh God, I just saw it again the other day on television, and yeah, I remember. Oh Jesus, what a movie!
On a lighter note, as a country, how do we go from Robert Mitchum and Sidney Poitier to Bruce Willis and Will Smith? Want to straighten me out on that one?
I have no idea, man.
Well, on these Republicans, Mike, as brutal as they are, I mean, they are brutal. I mean, yeah, but I remember those Democrats falling all over themselves to give Paulson and Bush $700 billion, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, the people we ought to be mad at is this oligarchy. I mean, that's the one that's really screwing us to death. I mean, you know,
well,
other people are just pawns.
Sure, that is my position and has been. Sitting around lollygagging each other about who did what and whether or not they got bonuses and you know, what's a default swap and all this other crap. It's the system. The system has been so corrupted. And so turned into mush that you and I and people outside that filthy system, not only will we never understand it, but we're going to be asked to pay for it forever. I mean, if you and I were to live another 500 years, we'd still be asked to pay for it even then.
Yeah, all they're doing is just propping up these wealthy people, Mike. I mean, mm-hmm. That's what it looks like to me. I mean, it looks like Obama's right in with it, to be honest with you. I mean, look who they put in there for to take care of this stuff. I mean, Sumner and Geithner. I mean, come on. I mean, you know.
Well, I know that conclusion seems like a logical one to draw, Bob. I'm not sure yet. Like I've said before, I'm just kind of holding my fire on this new administration. I got to see what they're going to do. You may be right. They may be totally as corrupt and rotten as the press, the people that went before them, but I've just got to wait and see. Bob, I got to leave you there. Thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
First one on your block, to every boy come home in a box, and it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam.
Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Yeah, we're going to do Uncle Mike's Story Corner coming up after this next break. Who's next up here? I guess it would be Dave in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Dave.
How's it going? I wanted to talk tonight about the 6th anniversary of the Iraq War, and nobody is reporting on it. Instead of that, they are reporting on an slightly unfortunate incident where Barack Obama made an unfortunate comment about his bowling score being a good score, maybe in the Special Olympics, which was not a smart thing to say.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that one. Is that the latest focal point for our crack media? Yeah, great.
And going on and on and on. Let's get a special report from so-and-so about what Barack Obama said.
Oh, Jesus.
About the Special Olympics. Yeah.
God.
I've got a phone number of one of the, I'm not going to say it or anything, but I've got a phone number of one of the broadcast outlets. And so I left them a little message, you know, about that. You know, how they should have been reporting on
right. The
6th year anniversary and yada yada instead of, you know, Barack Obama.
Right.
What's more important, when you put it on a scale, you're going to break the scale, right?
Absolutely. Right. But don't forget, Dave, what media in this country are supposed to do, like we've talked about a million times.
Yeah.
Media in this country are supposed to clean our brains every day, scrub us clean, and start all over again. It's to make us forget constantly,
right.
constantly.
It's like the article you read yesterday. Do you have it on your website?
I don't. If you send me an email and ask for it, I'll be happy to send you the URL, though.
Okay, because that was great. And, I linked that in my head. You know, Mike was right about that article. That's exactly what they're doing. And here's
right.
another example.
Right.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
It is.
That's awesome.
All right.
Later, man.
All right. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Yeah, I noticed that today, an absolute just lack of reporting, acknowledgement. Oberman brought it up tonight. So did Rachel. But, you know, I did watch both NBC Nightly News and ABC's Nightly News and saw nothing. Periodically during the day, switching around between CNN and MSNBC, saw nothing. I'm not saying nothing was there. I'm just saying it certainly was not on the evening news reports. I don't know about CBS, but and it's difficult, I think, for anyone who thinks about this. I'm not talking about the crazy people in this country. And they are legion. I'm talking about normal people who have decided to try to come to terms in their own hearts or minds or wherever this sort of thing you have to go to come to terms, that we actually deliberately attacked a country that had no more power to defend itself than any beaten down, almost third world country. You know, we had so destroyed Iraq in the first Gulf War and then imposed a decade of sanctions against them. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis died. Remember that infamous filthy statement from Madeleine Albright when she was Clinton's Secretary of State and she was asked, do you think that the deaths of 500,000 children as a result of the sanctions against Iraq is worth it? And she It was on camera, live, and she gave it a little thought. She said, yes, in the big picture, the big scheme of things, whatever she said, yes, I do. Well, she went back a couple of years later and said that was one of the most terrible things that she could have said. She didn't really mean it. She either had a change of heart. I mean, she didn't say, I didn't say it. She said, yeah, I said it, but I've had a change of heart or whatever. It's just kind of immaterial, but at this point, but after a decade of sanctions and the horror that only hurt the Iraqi people, didn't hurt Saddam and his two psychopathic sons, didn't hurt them at all. And then when the country is in that kind of a weakened, just beaten to pieces condition. And this is after we had salted their territory with depleted uranium. I mean, just on and on. You talk about a war crime. Holy Christ. And then George Bush unleashes shock and awe in this invasion. I don't know. Sometimes it's very difficult to look in the mirror in the morning. You know what I'm saying?
Can't pretend there's any meaning in the things I'm saying. But I'm in tune. Right in tune, I'm in tune, and I'm gonna tune.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is indeed. It's about 25 before the hour. And I think it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Here we are again, kiddies. And it's almost springtime. Time once again for another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight, our storyteller is Michael Winship. And the title of his story is, Oh, What a Lovely Class War. My goodness, how they howl when the proverbial shoe is on the proverbial other foot. You'd think the Red Army had just left Moscow and was preparing a frontal assault on the Federal Reserve. So what are conservatives, Wall Street, and financial television commentators shouting? Socialists! That's right. Spread the word. Socialists are swarming over our nation's capital and making off with the means of production, otherwise known as campaign contributions in the federal budget. You got trouble, my friends. The hysteria started during the campaign, retreated a bit, was back full throttle by the day after the inauguration. President Obama's left hand was barely off Abraham Lincoln's Bible when South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint told the January 21st edition of the Wall Street Journal, quote, what I'm looking to do as a conservative leader in the Senate is to identify those Republicans and even some Democrats and put together a consensus of people who can help stop this slide toward socialism, end quote. Newt Gingrich, resurrected yet again, proclaims his contract on America has been canceled and replaced by Barack Obama's European socialism. Josh Bolan, founder of the conservative website Reagan.org, is quoted in the New York Times saying, quote, socialism is something new for us to hit Obama over the head with, end quote. And a panel at the recent Conservative Political Action Conference was titled, Bailing Out Big Business, Are We All Socialists Now? And what do all these pesky socialists coming out of the woodwork want? Why, class war, of course. Arise, ye workers, from your slumbers, at least in time to watch early morning TV. On the Today Show last week, CNBC's Jim Cramer alleged that President Obama was perpetrating, quote, an agenda in this country now that I would regard as being a radical agenda. This is the most greatest wealth destruction I've seen by a president. Joan Walsh of Salon.com noted several hundred references to Obama and class warfare when she searched the words on Google News at the beginning of March and wondered, why are mainstream reporters pushing this storyline? The truth is, there's nothing new about any of this. A famous New Deal-era cartoon in The New Yorker shows Manhattan swells in black tie urging neighbors to, come along, we're going to go to the Trans Lux to hiss Roosevelt! And as financial historian Charles Geist told The Times, quote, to hear FDR referred to as Comrade Roosevelt during that period was not unusual, end quote. But although Obama embraces FDR analogies, in some respects, he's a piker by comparison. The Columbia Journalism Review linked to a chart from the National Taxpayer Union and noted, quote, the top marginal rate of 39.6% that Obama is proposing is actually low by historical standards. He may be adopting FDR-style rhetoric, but his tax plan isn't in the same ballpark. And it wasn't only Roosevelt. Throughout the Eisenhower administration, top tax rates exceeded 90%. Under Nixon, they never dropped below 70%. Even for most of Ronald Reagan's term, they were at 50%. Those presidents aren't often thought of as class warriors. Nor did Democrats or progressives fire the first shot in any so-called class war, as the recently poorer multi-billionaire Warren Buffett said a couple of years ago, quote, there's class warfare, all right, but it's my class, the rich class, is making war, and we're winning! America wasn't founded as a nation where winner takes all, but over the last couple of decades, that's the way it's turned out. The central vision of we, the people, has been distorted and manipulated by the powerful and privileged doing their damnedest as they wage class war to sustain their way of life at the expense of everybody else, even in this current crisis. A report last week by the nonprofit citizens group Essential Information and the Consumer Education Foundation titled Sold Out, How Wall Street and Washington Betrayed America, finds that from 1998 to 2008, Wall Street investment firms, commercial banks, hedge funds, real estate companies, and insurance conglomerates made $1.7 billion in political contributions and spent another $3.4 billion on lobbyists, a financial juggernaut aimed at undercutting federal regulation. According to Harvey Rosenfield, president of the Consumer Education Foundation, quote, Depression-era programs that would have prevented the financial meltdown that began last year were dismantled. And the warnings of those who foresaw disaster were drowned in an ocean of political money. Americans were betrayed and were paying a high price, trillions of dollars, for that betrayal, end quote. The truth of the matter may be that, as Nate Silver wrote at 538.com, quote, the stock market is engaged in something of a pity party, the prevailing emotions being fear and loathing. It is concerned about policies which might be burdensome to equity holders and large corporations, while perhaps nevertheless being boons to economic recovery, end quote. Add to that a heavy dose of petulance, arrogance, and malice stirred further by any attempt at curtailing their rice pudding days. While the dives in the stock market are real enough, the screams and rending of bespoke garments carry more than the hint of self-inflicted wounds, in the manner of spoiled kids saying, I meant to do that, when they break a toy, even though this administration is seeking solutions by joining hands with the very financial institutions that got us into the jam in the first place, including private equity firms and hedge funds. Cries of socialism! With their insinuations of sedition and Bolsheviks under the bedspread, ring hollow, especially with the threat of global communism 20 years past and many in the financial world opting for expediency over ideology. The basic truth is that there are no easy answers, no quick fixes, no kiss to the body politic that will make it all better. Nonetheless, They lash out, flailing madly, saddling up straw horses and conjuring memories of McCarthy-like witch hunts, desperate to point the finger at anyone but themselves. Another edition of Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode by Michael Winship, Oh, What a Lovely Class War. Join us again next time, kiddies, for another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. We know you love it. Back to your phone calls. Bill, where's Bill? There's Bill calling from Greenville, South Carolina, listening via the Internet. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Mike. Honor to talk to you.
My pleasure, sir.
My analogy for your warrior spirit is like that guy that led the 300 in that movie. You just, you know, keep on fighting against them guys and keep on coming in.
Man, I wish I had those muscles. Good Lord. Wow.
I'm really excited to get through to you. I just had a couple things. Whatever happened to the coverage of the Pat Tillman thing?
I don't know. I don't know what to, I know that the whole thing was exposed as trickery, treachery by the military against the Tillman family. But that dropped off the radar scope. Something else came along. This is what media does in this country. They have to move on. They have to find new things to talk about to help us forget the old things.
Yeah, I mean, one of the stories I read is like he was shot in the head, like close range, like an assassination thing or whatever you call it. Somebody dig that out of the soup again. The other thing was, I'm not really 100% on the definition of treason, but if a country is at war, our country, would it not be considered treasonous for these guys in AAG that are ripping off the country to be tried under the laws of treason?
I would think, if nothing else, they all should be jailed for the rest of their natural lives. When I think about the money, just the money for that was stolen, when you think about the young lives that have been stolen, you can barely stand up. You don't dare think about that. You don't dare think about the 4,000 plus American soldiers who have been murdered by George Bush and Dick Cheney. If you start to think about it too much, Bill, you'll just fall down and not be able to get up for a while. So if you don't think about that and think about the money that was stolen, the billions that these rat bastards have stolen, and then you couple that with the lies they told, if that's not treason, will somebody tell me what is?
Yeah. Well, thanks for being there, man.
All right. I appreciate it, Bill. Take care. Take care. We'll talk again, I'm sure. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Yikes. Boy, that song is from a different planet, isn't it? Good Lord. Thanks to our staff tonight. The program engineered and produced by Catherine Bay. Ben Birch provides technical assistance. Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf provide other stuff. So thanks to everybody. once again. Tomorrow's the first day of spring, right? We'll think of something. Maybe we can find a whole armload of daffodils and blow them up. Shock and awe for that. I don't know. We'll think of something. Well, my, who's here if it isn't Marge from Maryville, Indiana? Hi, Marge.
Hi there. Where's Diogenes when you really need him?
I went out for a smoke, I think.
Yeah, something good, I hope.
Yeah, well.
Listen, before I forget, dear heart, I can hear you well. I'm back to the phone problem again, but I can't hear the callers.
No, you can't. And what we're going to do, we have an engineer coming over here. We've had to work these bugs out one at a time. We got rid of the cockroaches and crickets. Now we're down to fleas and mosquitoes. So,
well, okay, just so I didn't know if I should call my repairman again.
No. We're going to have an engineer come over, and he's going to fix that so that when folks are on hold, they will be able to hear the callers who are actually talking.
Das is nice. Help me. I'm not straight on all these new names. Is it Geithner, Beitner, whatever his name is, the U.S. Treasury?
Yes. All right. No, he's the Treasury Secretary, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Say his name.
Geithner. Yeah.
Heard this afternoon late that he was one of the ones involved in eliminating the amendment to the bill that would have prohibited these folks getting that.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. I don't know. I don't know what to believe. The story coming from Geithner is that the bonuses were set. All of this stuff was set during the Bush years. See, here's what the Bush administration Republicans did.
Excuse me, but I don't have any trouble canceling a contract between General Motors and the union. But
right.
This contract,
right.
Well,
no, I understand. Listen, I completely understand. But what the Bush people did, they left all kinds of landmines and hand grenades with the pins pulled.
Mm-hmm.
Geithner takes a look at everything when he comes on board and he says, well, it appears that we can't cancel these contracts because if we do, then, it's going to be one more hand grenade with the pin pulled. Now, I don't know. I'm not that bright enough to understand how this stuff really works, but I don't think Timothy Geithner was trying deliberately to give a payoff of $165 million to a bunch of thugs who have done everything they could to bring down the global economy.
One can only hope.
Well, that's what Republicans want us all to think, that Timothy Geithner prevailed upon Christopher Dodd to, at the last minute, slip in an amendment that said, oh, by the way, the boys over there at AIG continue to get their money, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I refuse to believe that. I think that Geithner was hamstrung, just like, what did they leave for Obama in terms of a military involvement? We've got two wars they dumped on Obama's lap. He didn't want this. We've got a crisis in the financial service. This is all Bush's stuff.
You know, there was something else I heard tonight, and I'd be real interesting to know what that conversation was like. Supposedly, Elliot Spitzer, remember him?
Oh, sure.
Was supposed to be interviewed someplace, I think maybe CNN. And I didn't catch that conversation, but I'm beginning to wonder if maybe he was set up with a temptation that he sort of took a shine to.
Well, I don't think that so much. I think everybody knew that, just like everybody knew Clinton was a hound dog, everybody knew that Spitzer, by everybody, I mean the people who eventually exposed him, and they just waited for the opportune moment. This is what really pisses me off about people like Spitzer and Clinton. Knowing that they're taking on a rapacious fascist establishment, they still go out and do things that if they're caught is going to blow them to pieces, so to speak.
Mm.
And they do this sort of stuff, and then boom, the people who need to know. And where it concerns Spitzer, he was ready to bring the hammer down on those people in New York, and all of a sudden, oh, high prize hookers, well, goodbye, Elliot. You know, just like they did with Clinton. So it's a combination of things. I think people like Spitzer and Clinton are co-conspirators in their own demise, but the powers that be know the weaknesses of guys like that, and they use it much in the same way that J. Edgar Hoover used to use all of his personal information on people to keep them to shut up or to talk, one of the two. So, yeah, the Spitzer was rolled by the corporate fascists. They absolutely rolled. They utterly and absolutely destroyed him. But He handed them the dynamite to do it with. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not.
He lit the damn fuse. What are you talking about?
Well, there you go. You know, so you can't.
I mean, gee, willikers.
You can't absolve the responsibility that guys like Clinton and Spitzer had in their own the bombs going off in their pockets. But you damn sure can say the people who were opposed to them knew exactly how to get them, and they just waited till the opportune moment, pulled the trigger. That's all.
Yeah, well, some people never learn, I guess.
Just like I have all this information on you, and if you ever get too powerful, I'll just let everybody know what you really do for a living. All right, Marge, I'm out of here.
So I can figure it out.
I got to go. I'll talk to you next time, all right?
Take care.
All right, you too. Take care of your own self. If I ever told you what Marge really does, you would not believe it. Have a nice evening, okay? Thanks for hanging out here for a while. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. I'm Mike Malloy. Keep it lit.